Hello.
Hi. My name is Bernie.
And my name is Yasmin.
And you're listening to the Fashion Football Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for listening.
Yes. We just wanted to come on here before the episode starts to let you know to give us a review and to subscribe.
Definitely subscribe.
If you didn't hear it for the first time, subscribe.
We'll say it again. Subscribe.
And make sure to follow us on our socials. That is at
Yasisai on Instagram.
And King Bernie with two E's at the end. And of course, the podcast page, which is the Fashion Football Podcast. We made it easy for you. And as always, everything will be in the description
below.
Right.
So we're making it hella easy for y'all. Just click the description down below. Once you're done listening to this, get us on all the socials.
Yes. And give us a follow. And come join the family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Hope you enjoy.
Hello, guys. Welcome.
Sorry. Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry.
Stop it right now.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Fashion Football Podcast. This is Bernie.
And this is Yasmin.
Today, we have a guest.
Introduce yourself, guest.
Hello. My name is Fitzjean. I am a creative director, filmmaker, entrepreneur, you know, multidisciplinary artist. I am a storyteller.
Wow, all the things. So many layers.
So how did you start? Like, tell us about how you
got your start in the industry.
How did you become the architect?
That's a very good question. So let's take it way back. So back in high school, I was a fairly academic guy, you know, coming from an immigrant family, you know, I think you're pushed towards the academic because your parents are looking for you to have a future where your possibilities are very stable, right? So very early on, you know, my parents pushed me towards that. My parents were already very academic people. Like, my dad has a PhD. And my mom has a master's. So it was already a given for me that, like, okay, you know, school is going to be my thing. So I always grew up like that. And when I was in grade 11, 12, my goal was to either go into engineering or go into law, mainly business law. So by the time I was in grade 12, I had applied to multiple schools, including University of Ottawa. And I had gotten into different programs for both engineering and for business and law. Ultimately, I ended up going to University of Ottawa because my parents didn't trust me to go anywhere else because they were like, yeah, we want to keep you as close as possible. So I ended up going there. I was in a six-year program for business and law where you get two degrees. You get a JD, Juris Doctor, and a Bachelor of Commerce. The first 2 years is the business part, and the next 4 years are law school. And then, yeah, so my first year, so between the summer and the summer between my between grade 12 and my first year, I had gotten a job at this very weird marketing company. I was selling kitchen knives, kind of door to door. It was terrible. So yeah, I hated it. Me and my friend, we were both working. And at some point this random day, I told him, man, I don't want to go sell knives today. Let's just go for a walk. And I had my camera, my mom's camera actually. It was a very terrible point and shoot camera. So we just went and started taking photos and we really liked it. So we just stopped going to work and started, you know, just taking pictures the entire summer. And around that same time, Kerbins had moved to Canada. Kerbins is another creative. He had moved to Canada and we were already friends because we go to the same church and both Haitian. So by default, we know each other. he had moved to Canada. So I told him, yo, let's go on a shoot together. So we started shooting with Kerbins. So my friend Abraham and Kerbins were all shooting together for a little bit towards the end of the summer. Then my friend Abraham ended up going to Waterloo for school. And then I was in the process of figuring out OSAP for school. And I ended up having a little bit of money left from my OSAP, you know, money. So I was like, let me buy a camera, an actual camera. So I bought myself a bad DSLR from a pawn shop. I remember that day I was arguing with the guy. I ended up getting the camera for $100 while it was $300. So, you know, I'm a very good negotiator.
Damn.
So yeah, and then I started taking photos with that camera. At first, it was just photos of my friends, you know, like going around taking pictures of my friends, and I would go and shoot with Kermit. Kermit was a lot more social person than I was, so I would go and shoot with him and just, you know, shoot his models. The first time I ever did a shoot solo with somebody I didn't know, oh my gosh, I was so scared. What am I gonna talk about? What am I gonna tell them? Like, I was a very shy person before.
Look at you now. Growth. Look at me now.
How to turn tables. And then that's where it kind of started, the photography at least for me, you know? I started taking a lot more pictures of people I didn't know, you know, started collaborating with other creatives in the city, you know? I met a lot of people along the way, you know? That was back in 2015, you know? 2016, I started going to other cities, going to Montreal, to Toronto, to create with other people as well, you know? I started shooting with actual models. I remember the first time I shot with a model, I think it was from Angie's, and then I was doing his headshots and a portfolio, and I flopped. I did terrible. He sent the photos to Angie's, and Angie was like, they're bad. These are very bad. yeah, I remember that, you know. So I'd give him back his money. I'm like, man, I'm sorry, you know. What can I say? But, you know, I really wanted to get better and better and better, you know. I got a better camera eventually and started shooting a lot more. I met Wegan, I met Amir, I met all these people through photography and built the confidence, but also the skills as a photographer. And I started charging people, you know, and I started seeing that, oh, potentially this was something that I could do. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, at school, my grades were doing this. You know, I started skipping class to go do photo shoots. I started not attending some classes, and that reflected into my grades. Eventually, I was politely asked to change programs by the university. So I was like, okay, well, I'm not into business or law anymore. I'm not really into school, to be honest. But mm-hmm. I know that if I don't do school, I'll have to look for a new house. Yeah. Or somewhere to go. So I'm like, okay, you know what? Let me get into whatever program they have at the university that's remotely close to what I like. So I got into the communications program. Mm-hmm. And that's also what Kermit was doing at Carleton. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll try this at the Ottawa. So I got into that program because I'm like, that's the closest thing to what I want to do, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah, I became a photographer. You know, I went to New York, I went to LA, I met a lot of people, shot a lot, you know, started working with some brands, you know, things got better and better until some point photography wasn't enough for me anymore because there was always something in the back of my head where I wanted more. And that came back to my sense of storytelling. I always say that I've been a storyteller from like a young age, you know. I remember I used to write stories on like pieces of paper before. I used to draw terribly. And I used to make my own mangas when I was like 10, 11. And then I wrote my first novel when I was 12. So I always had this, yeah.
You definitely weren't bored as a child.
I always had this instinct of storytelling, but wow. I never thought that filmmaking was something achievable mm-hmm. or even possible for me, just based out of even straight representation. But eventually, I got the courage to go more towards filmmaking and creating videos. I realized that it is actually possible. Mm-hmm. And fast forward to now, it's not looking so bad.
No. He's being very humble right now.
That was like, oh my God, my voice. That was a whole, I don't know what the fuck is going on. That was a whole lot of information. Yeah. And now I have like a few questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead and dive into the questions first before we start.
Okay, the first one, I'm also Haitian. I don't know if you knew this.
I did.
So I know the struggle of being a creative and trying mm-hmm. to explain to your parents that you are trying to pursue a creative career. How mm-hmm. how is that conversation for you with your parents? And how did it go? And how do they feel about it now that you are, you know, you've grown in the industry and you have like something to show them, to show mm-hmm. that, you know, you're actually doing this for real.
You've created your own space and you're thriving in it now.
So originally, you mm-hmm. know, my parents always believed that photography was just a phase, you know, that at some point it's going to pass, you know, and he's just going to go back towards doing what he's trying to do. They really realized that I was really trying to do this the day that I told them that I was politely asked to change programs and I was no longer going to be a business major. That conversation was interesting, you know. My dad didn't say a word, you know.
That's the worst.
My mom was like, oh my God. Oh, da, 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 da. She was going crazy. She was like, oh, you, like, basically I went from being the child that they talk to the friends about to be to being like, Fitch, I don't know what that is. You know? I could see disappointment in their eyes, you know, the path that they had in their minds, you know, laid for me was no longer there, you know. I felt like they felt like I was purposely trying to struggle, you know. Like they were like, man, like, why do you want that, you know? Like, we came here to this country so that you can have it easier. Why are you trying to struggle?
They hit you with the il bento bien.
Like, exactly. That's you know? What they told you, huh? Like, man, life is too good for you. You know, like, you're just trying to find more things to struggle with. And, you know, and I was like, nah, like, I'm actually trying to do this, you know. And they were like, you know what, man, get a degree and then just do this thing on the side, you know. But yeah, they weren't very happy at first with my creative, my newly born creativity. But it slowly changed, you know, and it's crazy how much it has evolved to a point where, like, my parents have even invested into myself, you know, and my business. So they've gone fully 180, you know, like, they're proud of me now. But the reason why they are is because they no longer feel like they need to worry. I think for them, it's more about they want stability for me because they want to see me do well, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want me to be 35 and living out of their basement, you know? Like they want me to do well. And for them, stability through education was the easiest way, you know? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, if you become a lawyer or become an accountant or you're in finances, you have stability. Taking this rocky path, especially as an immigrant and as a Black man, is so difficult. Like, why would you put yourself in that, you know? Mm-hmm. But once they saw that there was actually a path and that there was actually a possibility for me to do this and actually live off of what I'm doing, you know, they're like, oh, okay. All right, you know, let me support. So eventually, you know, they did come around.
That's amazing. I feel like not every kid or every, like, young adult has that, like, 180 shift from their parents all the time necessarily. Mm-hmm. Some parents are just very stubborn and will not necessarily back it up, but others
it's because they want to see something, you know. Like, they want to see,
they're very much see it to believe it kind of,
exactly, thing. You know, yeah. like when we got the studio, they were like, oh wow, okay, yeah, this is serious, you know. Like, you know, so they have to be able to visualize it and see, like, okay, this, you're actually doing something.
Has to be, like, physical proof to back up that, like, could be something that's sustainable.
And also, I don't blame them because, like, obviously, for a lot of this industry is not something that they even know, and there isn't representation of, like, people like us in this industry. I even find that, like, even the Black people that are represented are often not Caribbean, like, let alone Haitian. Like, till this day, it's, like, super hard to find. So I think it's probably, like, the same thing on the film side as well. So I don't blame them. It's just, like, it does make a big change when you have the encouragement and, like, the support of your parents, right? Because, like,
oh, yeah. For me, it did, you know? And I was like, wow. But I understand. Photographers in Haiti don't make money, you know? So, you know, so it's like, I don't know what you're trying to do, my guy.
I'm also curious to know about the traveling side. Like, how was that one of your goals when you started? Like, how long did it take you to be able to travel? Was it kind of a pack and go and see what happens? Or did you have a plan? Like, how did that go for you?
Well, I was always the mentality that I need to explore and create, you know? So in my head, the first opportunity that I could get to go somewhere else, I would take it. And also because, like, I love traveling. I love seeing places, meeting new people, you know, that I felt like it just went hand in hand with photography and creativity. So the first place I went is Montreal, you know, first of all, because Montreal is an amazing artistic city and because I'm also from there. I remember back then I was 18 and I didn't want my parents to know that I was going to Montreal. So I used to do these one day trips, you know, so I'd leave at like 6 a.m. and come back at like midnight, you know, and just say I was working. And you know, so I used to pull these missions. I remember the first time we went to Montreal, it was in January and there was a snowstorm and I was taking my dad's Grand Caravan and it had very much no winter tires. And I remember I went to pick up Kerbin's and I'm like, yo, let's go. And Kerbin's like, bro, you know what's good for you? Just stay home. Because I'm ugly. And I'm like, no, bro, I got models lined up. You know, we're renting out a studio in Montreal. I can't, no, you know? He's like, bro, I'm not going. I'm like, I bet. So I left him there. We went to Montreal. It was a very scary drive. Oh, I can tell you that. I was praying.
I can imagine. No winter tires in a snowstorm in January.
It was insane, you know? But we went there, you know, we got there. I met up with this other photographer named Jason. We did a bit of street photography. After that, we rented the studio. I mean, still now, I'm sure it was all DMing models on IG. Like, hey, I'm from Ottawa. I'm coming to Montreal. Let's link, you know, let's create, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'd copy, paste 50 people, you know, and whoever gets back to me and we shoot, you know. So that's how I would meet people. And that's also one of the ways that, like, I realized that how Instagram was a tool to, as a photographer at least, to grow and to meet new people. And I started using it as a tool early on. And also, I felt like as a street photographer at the time, going to shoot elsewhere, kind of when you came back to Ottawa, it made you pop a little more. You know, people like, oh, this guy went to Montreal to shoot. Oh, okay. You know?
It's like so funny to me because it's really a 2-hour drive and it's just like,
I know.
It just gives you so much more credibility.
Oh my gosh. So after Montreal, we're like, okay, we got to go to Toronto. Pulled another mission, left at like 5 a.m, you know, we got there like 9, you know, we stayed there for like a day and then 6 p.m. we were gone, you know. So went there, we shot around in Toronto, met a couple people there, you know, I did it twice in a week.
Bro.
Yeah. It was in like March, like close to exam season. I was like, school was a second thought for me. It was crazy. You know, I went to Toronto, met more people. And the more people you meet, the more you shoot, the better you get. And, like, the more credibility you get, too. For the summer, because the summer was coming up, I told Kerbin's we should go to the U.S. You know, we should go to the States because everything's crazier there, you know? Mm-hmm. And then it was like, okay, but where, you know? And then again, I was, at this point, I was still 18. I was 18. Kerbin's was 17, you know? We're like kids, you know? We're like, bro, we ain't got money, you know? Like, Kerbin's was working at the Cineplex. I was working at McDonald's, you know, humble beginnings. It was like, damn, we can barely afford this. So how are we going to make it work? So I have an uncle that lives in San Diego. So we could go to my uncle's crib and then just stay in San Diego and then see what we can do there. We saved up, you know, worked the entire summer. August, when did we leave? I don't know. We left end of July, like July 29th or something. We stayed one day in Philly. It wasn't really one day because we got to Philly at 6 a.m. and our flight was at like 6 p.m. Mm. So we're like, okay, let's just explore Philly and then shoot and then get back to the airport. So we did that. Met a couple of people there too, you know, because that's all you do. You just DM people on IG and then whoever can meet you, meets you, mm-hmm. right? So we did that. And then we went from Philly to San Diego. There we met a couple of people. We got there on July 29th and my birthday was on August 2nd, right?
I can tell.
So my uncle was like, do you guys want to go to Vegas for your birthday? And I'm like, of course.
How like, old were you turning at this point?
I was only turning 19, you know, but I didn't really care about like
so who Vegas can, I don't understand what the
idea I just Vegas cared about to. Going somewhere else in the US and meeting more people because that's all it was about for me at least, you know. I don't know about Kerbin, but yeah, so he literally just dropped us off there and he's like, you know, we stayed in a hotel room that he paid for us, you know, for 4 days, and then we again IG meeting people, we met a couple miles there. We had some, he's doing well. we met some friends, you know, well, I call them friends now. You know, we shot with a lot of people, had a couple, you know, nice, fun stories.
Talking about off podcast.
And it was great overall, you know, just, and again, like wherever we went with the intention of creating, you know, we're like, we're going to create with somebody, you know, I wasn't really going there to have a vacation, you know, it was like, I'm going there, I'm barely sleeping. I was sleeping like 4 or 5 hours, you know, because it was just like constantly trying to create. Or if we don't find anybody, we would just ourselves go wherever and just find a way to create. You know, I remember one day, it was on a different trip. I was in LA, and then I was on Sunset Boulevard, and I met this guy, and he's like, he saw me with a camera. He's like, "Yo, you're a photographer?" He's like, "Yo, let's do a shoot." And he was well dressed. I'm like, "Bet," you know. and I just did a shoot with this guy, and I ended up finding out he was a fashion designer. But you know, that's just how it was. When you're traveling, you kind of have that spirit where your creativity just gets boosted, and everything just becomes more fire for you, and you're just, oh, okay, I could shoot here, I could do this, I could do that. I don't know. I've never created more than when I was traveling.
You kind of talked about traveling and creativity and stuff. So what was kind of like the major differences between working with people here in Ottawa versus working with other people in different cities? Like, was there a different work ethic? Are people's energy different? Like, what's happening? What's the tea?
So Ottawa, I mean, I can talk about my photography early on, at least. As a photographer, early on in Ottawa, it felt kind of almost, I'd say, elitist, where, like, you had these photographers that felt like they were...
There was a hierarchy?
They were the shit or whatever, okay. You know? And that, like, as a upcoming photographer, you couldn't come up to them and talk to them or ask them questions about what to do. No. They felt like there was us and there was you, you know? Mm. I didn't feel like that when I was going to Montreal, at least, because I was just meeting people and, you know, it was chill, you know? Or in San Diego, it felt amazing, you know? People were just responding, you know? Because, like, I would DM people in Ottawa and they leave me unseen. And I'm like, my guy, who are you? You know? like, I don't know what you're trying to, you know, like, what you're trying to show, like, which, you know? I was like, hey, whatever, you know? Some people... Actually, you, like, this is a couple guys, you know, I went to high school with, you know, they were a little older than me, like a couple of years, you know. I remember the first time I messaged them, nothing.
Wow.
You know, and I was like, all right, that's crazy, you know, so I'm gonna just stay quiet.
You know? What you just said is actually really interesting, because I've noticed, like, at least in some other cities, like, there are a lot of people who are working within their industry full time, and like, you won't see them online. Like, they don't exist on social media. And I feel like it might be just because, like, Ottawa's industries is very, like, young, and we're still kind of trying to figure out, like, a structure for us. Mm-hmm. That it's, like, the only structure that makes sense for us now is social media.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, there are people who are working in, like, the fashion industry who are styling full-time, whether it's in Montreal or outside of Canada, who are doing it full-time.
For, like, and, corporate, like, clients and stuff.
Well, they even do editorials, and they're... Instagram posts is like cats, their kids,
literally.
Which, I, like, so I love it obviously, but it's just it's very different to, like, what we have here, where it's like, here it's we have to
show our work, because otherwise, like, what do you do?
Exactly. for other cities, it's really much about, like, who you kind of know, and, like, networking and talking to people, because, like, you can walk down New York and fucking see like anyone, you know what I mean?
Yes. You know, I did in LA. I saw Shaquille O'Neal.
You see him?
Yeah. I remember we were in LA, and then we're talking to this girl. We were driving around. She was a very nice girl. She drove us around, you know. She bought us ice cream. Like, she was chill. She was very chill.
How cute.
Yeah, and then she was, because she works at the, I think she was at the time working either at the Beverly Hills Hotel or some other fancy hotel. And she was telling me that, like, yeah, like, seeing celebrities, even knowing celebrities is whatever in LA, because everybody's somebody. And then on that same conversation, we saw Shaq while we were in traffic. I wish I could have gotten out of the car, but we were both in traffic because he was in the car too. Yeah. But I mean, if you sit long enough in Beverly Hills, you'll go through at least one or two
cities. Yeah, there'll be people that you run into.
So I'm sure people, like, I'm sure the locals, they're used to it, sort of like, that's just DiCaprio. nothing big. But for us, it was like, oh my gosh, is that Shaq?
That's crazy.
Yeah, and the thing too, I realized when I went there is that, at least for me, it just felt like every person I was talking to was always one person away from somebody else mm-hmm. that could help me in my journey. You know, like I remember I was on an Uber, and I was talking to this Uber driver. Also, I feel like I talk more when I'm traveling. Like I talk to people more. I would have randomly talked to an Uber driver when I'm in Ottawa, just start having a conversation, you know. Yeah. But in LA, I was like, you know what? Let me talk to this guy. You know, that's probably the last time I'm going to see him. So I was talking to him and I was telling him I'm a photographer. I'm from Canada. You know, I'm just coming here, you know, trying to create and explore. He was like, oh, I can link you with my friend who's a photographer. He's a fashion photographer. You know? And I was like, yeah, for sure. And then he linked me with a guy. I ended up not meeting up with the guy. I only had a conversation with him on the phone. He was just talking to me about photography in LA and how he's doing. And, you know, give me tips and pointers. But that guy was a photographer for Chanel. And that's just a guy that I got referred to from an Uber driver. So it was just like, there's so many things that happen when we're in LA. Everybody's just one person away from somebody. Mm-hmm. That's just how it was, you know? Yeah. But there's also there's goods and bads about LA. But overall, you know, I feel like, at least in Ottawa, some people, not everybody, some people feel like they're a big fish, but you're a big fish in a small pond. You know, if you go to the ocean, you're nothing.
That's a nice way to put it.
I am a storyteller.
How was your transition with kind of photography towards, I mean, I don't know if it's much of a transition because there's different like aspects. I don't know. I'm not into the film industry, but how was that transition for you? Why did you want to transition? And what were some of the things that you've learned transitioning?
Making that switch, yeah.
Like I said, I see myself as a storyteller, and I felt like, yes, there are ways to tell stories with photography, and it is a storytelling output. But I also felt like filmmaking was the ultimate form of storytelling. I just didn't know it yet. So when I was doing photography, I started slowly doing video. My first outlet into video was through YouTube. So I made a YouTube channel.
Oh, right.
All those videos are private now, so you cannot find them. But it was pretty bad, you know? But that's how I kind of got slowly into video. I remember my first video I did was like an editing of like a recap of my year.
You were out here doing reels before reels were even a thing.
And I'm a visionary. So yeah, so I started with that. Then I started to do very, 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 very bad vlogs. Like they were going to be weekly vlogs, but I did 1 month and then I stopped. But that kind of started me into editing. And then I remember that was in 2017. By that time, I had done a couple of videos on my YouTube channel. I was kind of going all over. I started doing reaction videos. I felt like at that point I was kind of cloud chasing, but that's not the point of the story. I remember I went to Land Studio when it was back on Maryville, and then I had a conversation with Wegan, and Wegan had showed me these guys in the UK that were doing this show or something on YouTube, and I was like, damn, that is fire. I went back home and I had this idea for a show. It was only an idea, you know, but then I was like, you know what? Let me write the idea, you know? So I wrote the idea and I wrote a script for this TV drama. Well, it would be like a YouTube miniseries titled Magic Powder. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to try to wait for anybody and try to, because I didn't even know how to make a show. But I was like, you know what? I'll just do it myself with some homies. I finished the script. I knew that Kerbins was trying to get into videos too, and Sammy. So I just casted the homies, you know? I had Alex acting, I had Sammy acting, I had Kerbins acting. I went to Wegan and asked if I could use some of the equipment from Lens. And, you know, it was a terrible, terrible first project. But doing it, at least we shot the pilot. We didn't shoot the other episodes.
Yeah.
And it's not available anywhere to see. But doing it taught me so much. But also ignited a fire in me where I was like, wow, there's something there, you know? There's something there that's worth exploring that I hadn't felt from photography. After doing that project, I was like, you know what? Let me get more into video. Let me start reading more about video. Let me start watching more YouTube videos about how to do videos, mm-hmm. you know? So I started investing more into it. I bought a small video camera, it was a Sony A7S. I bought an iMac to edit my videos. I bought a microphone. I bought a very cheap light. I bought a tripod, you know? I started watching more videos. I bought a video editing book and a book about filmmaking. I started writing more as well, understanding how to write scripts, like the actual structure of writing a script. And then I decided, okay, I need to try to execute what I've learned, right, through videos. Mm-hmm. So me and a couple of homies, you know, we started this YouTube channel and this idea called All House. It was me, Alex, Cabu, and Sammy. And we started making those very short videos on YouTube. So I would write the script, I would direct, I would edit, you know, and they would act. Those small videos, although the scale wasn't as big as Magic Powder, because Magic Powder had like 20 cast and like 10 different scenes in like 6 locations, but it was terrible, you know? Mm-hmm. But those videos helped me understand the fundamentals of making videos and of getting into film, you know? Mm-hmm. And it gave me a little bit more confidence to try more, which I did eventually when I had the idea and started writing the idea for what would be my first short film that I would direct a year later, mm-hmm. you know? So the transition happened very slowly, I'd say, and the span of about 2 years, because I at that time, I was still doing photography. And even to this point, the transition is still happening, because if I look at my work now is about 70% video, but I still have 30% of photography that's coming in because people still know me as a photographer. Mm-hmm. You know, eventually, I want to get to a point where I'm a filmmaker and I'm directing film, and that maybe, you know, once in a while, if a project comes my way that I like, I'll do some photography, you mm-hmm. know? But I'd say that it was a long transition, you know, but I think that it was a necessary transition.
Because it's always a little bit there, I feel like. Like, once you start moving from one thing to another, mm-hmm. that initial, like, passion that you had is never really going to go away, and it's kind of like a skill that you're never going to really lose either, I find. So it's just, for me, it's normal that photography is still a part of what you do. And especially in film now, like, you still need photography as a part of filmmaking, which I feel like not a lot of people necessarily grasp or understand, because mm-hmm. someone's got to shoot the cover for the film poster. Someone yes. has to get stills or like behind the scenes and stuff. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it all ties in together.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, I learned so much from photography that translated into filmmaking. And the number one thing, the two things I learned is how to manipulate light and how to compose a scene, you know, because yeah. composition and lighting and photography is very important. You know, when I studied photography, all I was doing was using natural light to shape mm-hmm. my images. So I became very good very early in filmmaking with lighting, you know, to a point where so there's different roles in a film set, you know. So you have your director who's in charge of the entire creative output and guides the film. You know, he's mm-hmm. the guardian of the story. And then you have your director of photography, which is your DOP, who's in charge of lighting, lenses, camera, and all that stuff, you know. And early on, and even to this day, I'm more of a director DP because I'm able to direct, but I'm also able to understand cinematography and lighting to an extent that most directors can't because of my background in photography and video. So on some projects where I'm not a director, I've been hired before or I've been asked to DP as well because of my technical knowledge and on my knowledge of lighting and camera angles and camera movement and yeah. composition of a photo. So photography has helped me a lot in film. And it has also helped me when it comes to communication and to getting out of my comfort zone, because as a director, you have to be out of that zone mm-hmm. from the get-go, you know, yeah. like you can't walk into a set with like 20 extras and 20 crew and whatever and be like, you know, and just not talk to anybody, you know, you know, and the first time it is overwhelming, yeah. you know, like I remember the first time I directed a project, which was my short film for Gimme Father. Mm-hmm. And the first scene that we shot was actually a scene with about 20 extras, the entire crew. And I was like, wow, this is real. Yeah. This is, I cannot escape this. If it was me from the days of before studying photography, being thrown into a film set and being the director, I don't know, you know, if that would have been possible. So photography helped me in that sense as well, to get a bit more out of my comfort zone, to get to a point where I can direct a film, and being able to direct the actors, but also the crew, and being able to translate and dictate my vision to other people. Because mainly that's what a director does. A director just takes the idea out of their head and mm-hmm. tells it to other people. And they're the one that execute the vision.
I like that you call yourself a storyteller, because I feel like, for myself at least, I always say this, like, I don't like calling myself solely a stylist. Because mm-hmm. I didn't even start with fashion with styling at all. And I'm just interested in so many other things other than fashion. So I was wondering, as someone who calls himself a storyteller, what are the stories that you're trying to tell, and why are you trying to tell these stories?
Oof, that is a deep question. I'd say that for me, I want to tell stories, first of all, looking at the lens of a Black Haitian immigrant. You know, I know that representation is a big thing. So I want to tell stories that not only reflect my perspective, but also reflects perspective of people that the general audience is not accustomed to. I want to show things. I want to have the audience feel things that they haven't felt before, mm-hmm. you know, or that in general that they're not used to feeling. I want to tell stories that need to be told, because those perspectives have to be seen and those voices have to be heard. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't just want to shoot movies to shoot movies. I want to start a conversation. I want people to see a different perspective than their own, you know? And that's kind of what I've tried every film that I've worked, that I've either directed or that I've worked on, you know? Yeah. And even from my own perspective, I want to be challenged. I want to work on some things that challenge myself and my own views of reality and what I accept to be real or not, you know? Mm-hmm. So for me, that's the stories I want to tell. I know sometimes it gets conflicting, because you also want to survive and live off of what you're doing. And sometimes you're being handed a project that, like, oh, well, that's money, you know? And sometimes it's hard to keep that balance, you know? Because yes, mm-hmm. you want to keep your integrity, but you also want to survive. So there is a balance in there, you know? And so far I've been blessed that I've been able to work on mostly only the projects that I really want to work in, you know? It's been a blessing. But yeah, for me, it's all about telling the stories that I say matter, you know? And there's so many of them, so I don't think I'll ever run out.
To kind of segue into what you had touched on with challenges, so in your line of work, what mm-hmm. would you say is, like, the biggest challenges that you face? And then, to go hand in hand, what's the most rewarding part about what you do?
There's so many challenges. I think that every day, at every moment, there's a challenge. And I've come to embrace those challenges, to be honest, you know? Yeah. I kind of feel weird if
it's too easy,
things don't, you know what I'm saying?
I can attest,
like,
to that.
I base my filmmaking experience on Murphy's Law, that everything that could go wrong will go wrong. And that's how I live when it comes to film, you know? And I welcome those challenges. From the development of the project, I face challenges. When I have to write a story with a script, and then I don't really know the characters very well, I'm up, you know? Because as a writer, you need to put yourself in the head of each characters, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have to put myself in the head of, like, a middle-aged white man. And I'm like, how do I do that? You know? So that's a challenge, you know? But I welcome those challenges all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. Or in pre-production, where when the producer tells me, hey, that's the budget you have, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's a challenge, you know? There's always challenges, but you get the satisfaction when you finish the project. Mm-hmm. And you realize that you overcame all these challenges, or you found ways through them, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, it's not that bad after all.
Yeah.
You know, like, I remember when I got a masterclass, the license, I got and I watched the Martin Scorsese masterclass first. And I remember vividly one thing that he said was that as a director or as an editor, whenever the editor edits the first rough cut of your film and you watch your first rough cut, he's like, it's almost impossible for you not to get physically ill, because you're like, oh, what garbage is this? You know? And I was like, oh, is that really like that? And I remember what I did for Give Me Father, and I was editing it with my editor, and we finished the first edit, and I looked at it and I'm like, this is very bad. This is terrible. You know? I let the project sit there, you know, I let it breathe, and mm-hmm. I came back to it with fresh eyes like a week later. And then you find things. You're like, oh, what if I put this here? What if I remove this there? What if I merge these? And then you work towards a better product. After 2, 3, 4, 5 different revisions and different drafts, you're like, oh, this is not that bad after all. Mm-hmm. You know, that gives you so much satisfaction because you're like, wow, okay, I'm not as bad as I thought I was. You know, completing a project and getting a project done mm-hmm. brings you all the satisfaction.
I kind of figured that was going to be your answer for at least the rewards part. But kind of tie into that in terms of like having the satisfaction when the project is done. What would you say so far is the project that you're most proud of?
Ooh,
I feel like I know the answer to this question, but I'm not sure.
That is a very tough one mm-hmm. because I'm proud of different projects for different reasons, right? Like,
that's how I feel about my stuff.
For example, right, I'm extremely proud of Forgive Me, Father, uh-huh. because that was my first film
yeah.
that I directed, produced, that we finished. And although there's a lot wrong with it, I am very, very proud of that project because that's the first one, you know, and yeah. that we had it done, we made it happen. Thinking about how almost everybody in the crew for this project was a first timer, like everybody that we had besides the composer and the makeup artist, it was all their first time doing a film, wow. you know, and that we made it happen. You know, we pushed through, you know, like, and we did it, you know, so I'm very proud of this project. You know, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's my best project, for sure it's not, but I'm extremely proud of it. I'm even proud of Magic Powder to a certain degree because that's what launched me into doing this.
Yeah.
You know, although I think it's garbage. I'm ashamed of showing this to most people.
Yeah.
You know?
I think everyone's first project, like, or the first thing that we've created is like, we look back at it now and we cringe.
You know what's funny? My first ever project is probably my favorite one to this
really?
Day.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that is very interesting.
What do you consider your first project though? Because like for me, the first thing that like I ever like consider myself to have created or like put out there was like old bummy lookbook from like 2017 that is still on YouTube. Please don't search it up if you're listening.
I'm definitely gonna search that up.
No,
I'm gonna search it up.
I'm begging you.
Sure.
Yeah, like to this day, not something that I mean, it did launch kind of what I wanted to do in terms of like styling for real, but yeah, real. Project when I worked mm-hmm. on that seasonal campaign for cinema, that was like my first like gig as a stylist
uh-huh.
for real, and I'm still proud of that to this day, even if I'm not like, you know, fully content with like how the clothes were styled because they don't reflect my personal style.
Yeah,
the fact that it was like published mm-hmm. and like people were able to see it on like bus stops and
yeah,
like,
I saw that
you
project.
Know,
I was like, that's,
and
that's
like
pretty
you know
cool.
in the mall on like little like banners and stuff. I was like, woo, that's mm-hmm. new.
I don't know. Well, okay, my first ever stuff that I did creatively have been mainly writing and designing.
Yeah.
But my
You're
first...
a really good writer.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I actually want to do a lot more writing. Mm-hmm. And I'd want to get into film. That's like
wink.
No, hey, just let me know.
It's a little secret of mine, but I really want to do a fashion film. And
you're talking to the right person.
I literally have it like... Anyways, we'll get into that later. Yeah.
I'm always looking to add people to the roster. You know?
Yeah.
So,
I already have my concept. Like, it's
really.
I think I've told you about this, but it's like my little like secret project that like I'm kind of like
I don't know.
I'm kind of shy to talk about it. Because
I don't know if
it's
the
not...
one that I'm thinking of or it's another the one that we've talked about with like a bunch of other.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it later. We'll chat.
But my first ever styling project is called Solo, and I actually have a picture right here. It was this one. I shot the pictures by myself, and mm-hmm. we did a video, and I also styled her. And I shot the pictures on the iPhone 6.
Ooh,
that was
girl.
My first
okay.
ever project.
Okay.
And I don't know why I still love it so much. And one of the
it's
pieces,
like your baby.
One of the pieces that she was wearing, I designed and I sewed it by
Ooh,
myself.
That's why you.
Wow.
Love it
so
much.
Maybe it's that's why I love it
yeah.
so much. But it was just like I think the looks look pretty cool. I don't know. Sometimes I look back at this project and I'm like, wow, like I really have this eye for these types of stuff, right? And then I think like another project I'm really proud of is a project that no one has seen yet.
Mm.
Yeah. and it's coming out hopefully this year.
Have
hopefully.
I heard about it already?
Yeah, okay. You have. The Grace Jones Project with Ziggy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stay tuned for that. I'm just saying, this project is going to be insane.
Like, which project is that?
I did a project with Francois, and it was inspired by Grace Jones. Ziggy was modeling.
Francois the photographer?
Yeah.
Oh, Francois is fire.
I know.
Francois is like, fire.
Me and Francois work so well together.
Shout out to him. I went to high school with him, and I didn't know until like a year and a half ago that he got into photography. We actually went to high school and elementary together.
That's so funny. Wow. But
his progression has just been like,
oh yeah, insane. It's insane. Like if you see him work in the studio, like it's insane. Like his understanding of light is like,
I want to work with him.
I don't think people understand. Like when you see him work, you're just like, what the.
I want to work with him so bad, but he's so booked and busy. No, he's a fun time.
I'm so grateful that I've been able to work with him, and I feel like it's really helped me with my styling stuff.
Yeah,
and just have a different perspective, because he was like one of the first photographers who kind of made me think about how light could potentially reflect on fabrics and how that could affect like the way that he has to work with what I do. So now it's like I'm not only just thinking, oh, I need to make a cute look. He really made me think about trying to put myself in the shoes of someone else as like a creative. That makes sense. So now it's like I'm not just thinking about, oh, I need to make this look good for the camera, but now I'm thinking about, okay, well, how does light reflect on this fabric? And it's a more like wider understanding.
There's a lot of detail that goes into it.
Yeah, so he really like taught me about, like, I was always someone who looked at details, but like ever since I've been around, even you're a lot more oriented about that.
I feel like I'm still not there yet, because like
we have to work together, like for real. It's actually crazy we have not worked together.
We've literally started a whole damn podcast together. We've never worked on a project together once.
Can you imagine?
That's crazy.
I wanted to know what has your experience been like working with a stylist on set? And the reason why...
Terrible. It's been horrible.
Wow.
I'm playing.
But the reason why I was asking that is because I feel like a lot of the times people don't think about having stylists on set, especially in Ottawa.
For film.
Even for photography, people don't think about
that. But I would say
that.
Especially for film, too.
Video, like it's a second music thought. Video.
We can talk about, that is a different subject. We can talk about music videos later, but just for all you local artists that would be listening out there, please
hire a stylist.
We're here.
How was your experience like working with a stylist, and what's the difference between like when you don't have one on set versus when you do have one on set?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The question for me, and when it comes to, okay, I'll talk about photography first.
Okay. Yeah.
For photography, the question is not, do I want a stylist? The question is, can I afford a stylist? Most of the time, you know, because most projects I've worked on in photography, the budget is just so small.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not a greedy guy, but you know, a man gotta eat, you know. So sometimes it's just tough, you know, to be like, damn, you know, I gotta split that between the makeup artist, stylist. This is getting kind of mod, you know. So photography, I've only been able to hire a stylist on the projects that have been bigger, you know, like I've done a couple shoots for magazines, and I've done some shoots for like companies. Like I had this gig that I did for Bon Look, for Giant Tiger. So when you have these kind of clients, then it's fine, you know, like I can hire a stylist for the entire day, no problem, you know. But when I'm out here just shooting homie's brand, you know, like that he's just printing stuff on a t-shirt, you know, like they ain't got the budget for a stylist.
Nah.
You know, so it's like, well, yeah, so I've probably, as a photographer, I've probably worked with a stylist maybe like 3-4 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, film is very different. So when you work in film, 99% of the time you have dedicated roles and dedicated departments, right? So the way it usually works is that you have, at the top, you have the producer. The producer is the one that holds the moolah. He holds the money, you know, and he distributes the money. And his goal is to make the project happen on time, on target, and within the budget.
Shout
you know,
out Amir.
and he takes care of anything that's contracts, you know, permits, all that stuff. Sometimes if the project is bigger, you have multiple layers of producers. You have a producer, you have a line producer, you have an associate producer, you know, you have assistant producer. So you have a lot of producers that do different things, you know? So that's what that's at the executive level, at the operational level. Then you have the director, you know? So once a producer gets a script, he hires a director to direct the story, you know? So the director is the, he like I said, he's the guardian of the story. He's the one that makes, that takes the idea he has of the story and gives it to other people to create, right? So the director is usually going to bring on board the next two most important people on the set, which are the director of photography, the DP, the cinematographer, and the production designer. The director of photography, the DP, is the head of the entire camera department, lighting department, and grip department, right? The production designer is the head of the entire art department. Usually, on most sets, the art department is the biggest department and this on set.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, it's not the case, you know, but usually that's how it is, right? So working with your production designer and your DP as a director is very important, because working with the production designer is going to be the head of the hair and makeup, wardrobe, set design, props, location, everything. Like, you see a car on the street, that's production design. You know, like, title design, anything that you see in your frame and the movie is all production design. You know, the production designer oversees the art director that oversees the set construct, the set constructions. If, I mean, that's if you have a big set, you're building a big studio, a big movie where you're building sets, you know, if you have anything, like you have a car chase, you have a car and the scene, that's from the production designer, you know? So it's a very, very, very big role, right? Coming from a more technical camera background, I've had a great affinity with my DP, you know, because like I know what I'm talking about, you know, so me and my DP always go back and forth, you know, so I make sure whoever I have as my DP, we have a good connection, you know. It's been a little harder with the production design because it's been hard to find somebody that we match well together, and also like in terms of ideas, you know, bouncing off of each other and resonating in that sense, you know. So on a film set, usually the ones that I've been part of, they're very low budget. So because of that, we've kind of merged a lot of the art department roles between one or two or maybe three people, you know. So we'll have one person that is the production designer, but is also the set designer that also does wardrobe. And then we'll have one person that does makeup. And then that's the art department, you know. So I've always had someone in the art department in charge of at least either the entire department or parts of it. So there's always been someone that took care of wardrobe. There's always been someone that took care of set design. So in that sense, you know, I've always had a quote unquote wardrobe or
stylist
on set, you know, for film, you know, because you can't not have someone for that. And film, and photography, you can maybe get away with it. And film, you cannot. You cannot. It becomes like impossible to handle. So on Forgive Me Father, I had Alex, who was basically doing everything. And then I had this girl, Julia. And then, but she was just ironing clothes, to be honest. Because she was a PA. She wasn't really in.
Okay.
She was a production assistant for everybody. Okay. So everybody would just use her whenever they needed, you know?
Okay.
So it's like if Simon needed someone to put the C-stand there, it's like, oh, Julia, you know? So it was like whenever someone could
use,
you know? On Pierre Saint-Denis, it was, again, Alex and Julia. And then on Jayla, I had Brianna and Alex. That was an interesting combination, to say the least. I'm not going to comment any further. You know, I can already see Alex behind me just shaking his head, you know. I'd say that the production design for Jayla until the last film was probably the best production design we had. And that's probably because that's the first time that there was actually a budget for production design. Before, it was like, yo, can you do something with $100? You know? And then it's like, man, $100, what can I do with that?
Yeah.
You know? Usually on a set, the director doesn't speak to the production designer about budget, right? But on every set I've been on, that's what happens, right? So people believe that if there's no money, or if I say the budget is $100, they get mad at me, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm like, hey, it's not my fault. I'm not funding this project, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not the one allocating money, yeah. You know? And it's not even fair to get mad at the producer, because the producer is the one, yes, managing the funds, but he has to think about everything, not just the budget of the art department. And it might seem that it's a little bit of money because it's still so small compared to the actual budget. Mm-hmm. But when you think about everything else that has to be taken care of, you know, from permits to this and that, to renting this and that, renting a truck, renting a van, blah, 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 blah. You're like, oh, damn. I'm very surprised that there even is any money, you know? And you can't blame him because he's only working with the money he got.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So it's difficult to do any different. Obviously, if we had $1 million, you know, I'm sure there'd be a lot of money for the art department. And then
beautiful.
The production designer would have an art director, would have a set dresser, would have a set designer, would have a prop master, would have a wardrobe, would have an assistant to the wardrobe. Oh. You know, we'd have the custom designer would have it'd be blessed. You'd have some PAs for everybody. You know, you'd have crafts, a craft table. You know, and I've seen it. I've been on $1 million movie set.
Yep.
And that's how it was, you know. Everybody had comms, you know. They had a whole craft table. They had a whole craft team. They had what do you call those? Where the actors chill in
green rooms.
They had trailers. That's how it usually is. But obviously, you know, at the under ND level, you got to do what you got to do with what you have. But to answer your question, it's always better to have someone dedicated to styling. So when you have a costume designer on film, you know, and when you have a stylist in photography, it's always better, you know. And when we can, yes, please, you know, because as a director, I don't want to have to worry about. I don't want to be sitting down with my cast and talking about. Because again, as a director, you're going from meeting to meetings, talking to this person to that person, and you have to focus on so many things that the less you need to worry about, the better it is. The less hats you have to wear, the better it is. And that's what I've learned. Like when I was doing Forgive Me Father, I was wearing so many hats. Like I was a director, I was a producer, I was this, I was that. So because I was a director and a producer, yes, I was thinking about the shot and I was thinking about the interaction between the actors and their purpose and the story and their emotions. Mm-hmm. But I was also thinking about, damn, I have 40 minutes to wrap this up. I'm going to have to be paid so-and-so amount of money, you know?
Yeah.
So those worries kind of affect your work, you know? So as a director, the least amount of worries you can have and the more you can be focused on just telling people, hey, that's my vision. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And then you go back to, you know, the better the project's going to be. And in the best of worlds, you know, that's how you want it to be. Where all I do is just relay my vision and then I go back to talking to my actors. Because as a director, that's what I would want to be. I would want to be sitting down with my actors and crafting their performance. Because ultimately, you can have the most beautiful set. You can have the most beautiful image. If whatever comes out of these man's mouth is doo-doo, then your movie's not it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that whenever the case may be where I can work with someone with a stylist or with a costume designer, the answer is always yes. And I've only had good things to say about all my collaborations.
Good to know.
I was asking because I've literally heard horror stories from other photographers when they did not have models or when they did not have stylists, and they'll have like a guideline to like what they want the model to wear or whatever, and they show up with like some of the they show up with some crazy ass outfits.
It's very stressful. Honestly, I've had shoots where I had to style models myself.
Oh no.
Lord almighty. It is like I've had days where I'm aimlessly going through aisles of Alpha Village and I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, like trying to figure out what to get on. And then I'm like, bro, like sizes. And I'm like, why?
Yeah. It's a lot that goes into our job,
you know,
a lot of detail.
And a lot of people think that stylists don't do anything. They think stylists just pick out clothes.
No, we don't.
And make y'all look cute.
No, we don't.
I understand your value.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate that you understand more about really, I specifically appreciate it because I've worked with you now.
I really appreciate that.
Trust me.
I don't think people understand, and like a lot of, at least for me, like most of the work is not even actually like figure out like the looks. Mm-hmm. There's so much more that goes before and then after.
Yeah, because you want to, just as much as you as a director want to be able to communicate a story to the audience, like people don't understand that as much as the actor's like portrayal is a pinnacle point of the entire film and the main point of the entire film, the wardrobe also has to equally translate, because if it doesn't blend, then like
everything has to translate. Like, yeah, like for me, a good film is a film. Have y'all watched Dune?
No.
Well, today is what.
Oh, same word.
Today is when I'm supposed to watch it.
That is crazy. Yes, that movie is a perfect movie of perfect synergy between cinematography, acting, production design, set design, wardrobe, makeup, music, editing. Everything is just working together. Everybody understood the assignment.
Yeah.
You know? And you see it. And when you see it work well, you're like, yeah, that's a great movie. You know, I've seen movies where some parts were good, but some parts weren't authentic. You know, I think as directors, you know, some things you don't give as much importance. You know, some directors are not very well versed with music, so they usually don't know what to tell to the composer when it comes to the music. So the music ends up being garbage, you know? Some directors are too focused on cinematography and they don't really care about acting or about production design. So you can see the movie looks beautiful, but you're like, it was a bad movie, you know? So obviously when a good director, you know, that we call an auteur, you know, knows that I have to say it with the way English people say auteur. Oh, you know, if I say auteur, it's not fire enough.
Debatable. So okay, continue.
A director that knows every little aspect of the process, know how to communicate that to each department so that the entirety of the project is just in a symbiotic relationship, and it's just yeah. Anyways,
big words.
Yeah, you get me.
Yeah, I get you. A follow-up question that I wanted to touch on, because by the time that this episode is released, the project that you're currently working on is already out. So what I want to know is, what has been your experience working on this project, knowing that there were more like roles that were filled, less hats for you to wear, and how do you feel that it has been for you to work with an actual, like, more sustainable, like, production design team?
This project, which is the short film that we just worked on called More Than Hair, was a very stressful project.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Because of the timing.
Yeah.
Right? I've never had to work on any project in my life that was, timing was so tight. Like
very, very tight.
It was insane, you know. And again, I am happy that we did it and that we made it happen. I probably never will do a project which this short of a timeline.
Never.
But I felt like it was necessary to do this project, and I'm happy we did it. And I do feel like the production design on this project, from, you know, from set design to costume design, was executed to the T, you know, and that it definitely elevated the project and that it made it better. And the fact that I didn't have to worry so much about it definitely relieved a bit of my stress, obviously, because of how crazy and last minute this project was. That still put my stress level at over 9,000.
Yep.
But overall, you know, it definitely did help, you know, so... Yes, you were a great help.
Thanks. Just wanted to hear that, get the recognition. But for those who are listening now, by the time that this is out, I think it's going to be like February some or March some that this episode is out. So if you have not seen the film yet, go watch it. It was insane to work on, and it was very sleepless for the crew to be a part of this film.
This is filmmaking.
Exactly. But there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears put into this. So
I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, it's honestly, I'm very much looking forward to the final product and watching it like at the premiere and seeing it for myself with my own eyes afterwards. Because
first film,
girl,
congratulations.
I'm scared.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this, you know. I think that it's going to do very well at the festivals. So I'm excited to, obviously I'm excited to premiere, but
yeah,
I think it's going to, like, I think it can do very well at the festivals. And if it does well at the festivals, then we all got, you
exactly.
know?
So, so part.
Especially this year, because the COVID restrictions are getting lifted. Mm-hmm. So we're actually going to have in-person screening. So if we, for example, if we get, if we get accepted, if we get accepted at, like, I don't know, Tribeca, right, then best believe we're going to New York, you know? So we, like, I'm very, very excited, and I think that it's going to do very well. So,
yeah,
you know,
fingers
crossed. But yeah,
the story is definitely a very important story to be told. And I think that everyone who worked on this set really somehow, some way, they connected with it,
mm-hmm.
even if not every single person could relate personally to it. And it just, mm-hmm. like, even watching, like, playback, like, while being on set, like, it just looked so good. So I'm, like, very, 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 very excited to mm-hmm. see the final product.
I just edited the first cut, and I'm writing the credits. You know, I showed it to one person mm-hmm. So far. I showed it to Kerbins, mm-hmm. and he was like, man, let me get a tissue.
Oh, wow. Really?
You know, so I'm excited. I'm excited, you know.
Okay, Fitch, before we wrap this up, one mm-hmm. last question for you. What is your next project?
What are your next moves? What's next for Lens Studio and Fitch Jean in combination?
Damn, that is a lot. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, you know.
Just keep in mind that by the time that people are listening to this, it's like February or March of 2022.
Okay, when it comes to me, Fitch, as a filmmaker,
yes,
the next big project that there's a couple that I'm anticipating to work on. If everything goes right, fingers crossed, then next year, 2022, mm-hmm. When this releases, I will be working on my first feature-length film, right? So that means that that's a movie, you know, not a short film, you know?
What I'm understanding is you're going to need help.
Of course. Now a feature is an entire different beast mm-hmm. from a short film. I did one feature this year, 2021. I wasn't the director, I was the script supervisor on that project, and I can tell you these were 15 days of hell. So it's completely different than a short, because a short, you're doing like 12-14 hours in a day, and then you come home, you're like, ugh, that was crazy.
Yeah.
A feature, you're doing that 15 times, 30 times, you know. So it's something, mm-hmm. you know, but, if everything goes right, I'll be working on my first one this coming year.
Yeah.
And I am very excited about this. This story is a story that, again, I think that it needs to be told.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very intimate story about the family, and about the process of grieving, and about, it touched a little bit of mental health too, you know? So I think that project is very important, and I hope that we get a chance to do it. So mm-hmm. there's that project, and then there's another short film that is in the plans, and that one is set in another country. So
are you filming this here?
I'm not filming this in Canada, you know, so hopefully that one can happen too. Mm-hmm. If it does happen, it would happen over the summer, and it would be shooting across the Atlantic Ocean in Africa. So I'm not saying more.
But... No, actually, I want you to stop talking right now. Because, like, it's one of those things, like, you say that, and then you just...
That's it. That's all people need to know right now.
So
wow. Sorry, guys. This is exclusive stuff that you can't hear, but we're going to have to talk about this on our own.
That was very exciting. And, you know, for Lens Studio, as my business, you know, 2022 is going to be a great year. I already mm-hmm. know that. I expect nothing but blessings to come our way. You know, I expect nothing but growth. I hope to be able to, for us to hire our first employees mm-hmm. next year. you know, as an employee, not employee, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, the business will be growing in every aspect. I'm not even worried, you know, I feel like 2021 was great, you know, we achieved a lot of, like, we achieved big milestones for the business, you know, but I think 2022 is gonna really be, like, an explosive year.
See, it's that 222 number that we keep referring back to all the time. That's amazing. I'm very excited for you and for the studio and just to see how everything plays out. I look forward to either seeing it or participating at the same time.
Yes.
Same here.
We're just here integrating ourselves in this specific. We're trying to eat too.
I love it. I love it. It's a big table. We can all eat.
Oh, amen.
Amazing.
Truthfully,
provider, look at this.
Where can people find you?
Yeah,
I'm anywhere. this is where I plug myself.
Yes.
Find me on Instagram at The Architect.
Mm-hmm. Wait, hold the time out. Sorry. I've always wondered, how did you come up with that name?
Okay. I remember I was on IG and then I was trying to change my name because my name was something very stupid. So... I was like, let me change my name. I wanted to be something very kind of different, you know, and that was kind of like you could remember, you know. And then I saw this page on IG that was an architecture page, and they were called the Visual Architects, and I was like, oh, I like the that has a nice ring to it, you know. And then I looked for that name and then it wasn't available because the actual architect, the way you actually write it, it wasn't available, you know? So I took a note out of my friend's book, my friend Dini at the time, whose IG was the visionary, but the A in visionary had an X, you know? And I was like, ah, let me do the same thing. So, and that's how my IG handle was made. Funny enough, I've been contemplating changing my IG handle in the last couple months.
To what?
You know? Yeah.
I've been thinking about it. You know, at first I wanted to find if I could just have Fitch. I messaged a guy. I talked to him. He's not about it. I offered him $10,000. I wasn't going to pay him $10,000. But I wanted to see what he would say. He's like, man, no amount of money in the world would make me change that name. I was like, wow. Fudge. You know? He said that even Abercrombie and Fitch reached out to him and he was like, nah. You know, so that's when I was like, yeah, I'm not getting the Fitch handle, you know, but I've been thinking about it, you know.
I think about changing mine all the time too.
At this rate, like, what can I change it to anymore?
But like, do people actually call you the architect in real life?
Crazy you say that, because at some point, you know, when I was just strictly doing photography, my name was not on my profile. It just said the architect. And even my face was barely on my profile. All there was is that sometimes I had an image of me wearing a hat and some glasses.
Oh, right? My God, I remember.
And some shades, right? So people generally did not know either what it looked like or my name, right? And I remember the first time, so when Amir used to have his brand, Zargara, at a, and he had a shop, he used to have every new release of his collection, he used to have a collection release, and then it was a big party, you know, where all the creatives would pull up to. And then I remember the first time I went there, I came with my hat and my glasses. And I heard someone saying, yo, is that the architect? And I'm like, it just felt so weird. I'm like, I was with Kermit, he was just like, yeah, bro, it's the architect, you know? And then, like, it was like, people are actually calling me like that. That's crazy, you know? But it made sense because they didn't know what my name was or whatever, you know? Or like, I remember this one time I was at Lens Studio and I was about to do a shoot with my friend, DeAndre. I was waiting for this other girl to finish her shoot. She was, I don't even remember what she was shooting, but I was waiting. And then as I was waiting, I think there was two girls shooting. And then one of them came up to me and said, oh, you're a photographer, you know, just small talk. I'm like, yeah, I'm a photographer, And she's like, oh, I love meeting new creatives, you know. So she asked me for my IG, right? So she gave me her phone. I took her phone, I went on the IG, and she was already following me. So I'm like, oh, you already follow me. And she's like, oh, you're the architect. And I was like, Yeah. My name is Fitch, by the way.
That's funny.
You know, so it did. So, and because I had gone to a point on IG where I had gained a decent amount of following.
Yeah.
You know, where so yeah, people genuinely
knew you by your handle instead of your name.
Yeah. Call me.
I mean, I'm guilty of being one of those people. I did not know your name until I met you for the first time. So.
Yeah, it happens.
My name is literally in my handle, and people still call me King Bernie, and I hate
Listen,
it. Like it's just...
the first letters of my three name are in my handle, and people will call me by my handle if they first meet me, and they're like, "So what is this word?" And I'm like, "I'm like, if you click That's in the crazy. Bio, my full govy is there. Like it's not that hard to figure out." Yeah,
I'd be like that.
Okay, so they
like
can that. Find you at. The Architect
yes,
on Instagram.
On IG. You know, I link Lens Studio. So lensstudio.com. That's our studio. You know, you can rent a studio, you know. If you ever want to hire me to do creative work or my team, my agency, we have our own video production agency where we do commercial work for corporate clients and for other type of clients. So that's lenscreative.com. Mm-hmm. And then we just launched a rental house where we rent out equipment for any size of production, from a small music video to a whole feature film. And that's lensrental.com. So you can hit us up there too.
There's
so,
a lot of outlets to get to.
Lots,
so get to
lots
meet
of
people.
Them.
Yeah, got a lot of resources.
Uh-huh.
That is all.
Okay. Cool.
That is all for today's episode. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. Thank you guys so much for listening in on this episode.
We hope you enjoyed it, and you can find us on all platforms at the Fashion Fopa Podcast.
And find us individually at Yasisaya on Instagram.
And King Bernie with two E's at the end on Instagram. Everything will be linked in the show notes below. Make sure to
subscribe
and give us a review.
And we'll see you guys on the next one.